everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for joining us. This is Sip and Tea with Nat and Z. I'm Nat.
And I'm Z. Good morning. Hello.
Konnichiwa.
Yes, we have a jammed-packed episode today on midlife crisis. So instead of all of our, you know, usual la-ti-da and banter, we're going to just kind of transition right into it because this is a topic that we were able to gather a lot of information that we think will be helpful for everyone. So just starting off with some hot tea, okay?
Yep.
If you've had
a lot going on.
Yes. And I don't, I'm not going to address everything because I think like everything doesn't need to be addressed. But if you haven't been living under a rock, we all are aware that the feds came for Diddy, Homeland Security, to be specific. They came and raided his LA homes and his Miami homes. And apparently it's off the basis of sex trafficking and drugs. And I'm saying this because this is a theme that I would like to run throughout the hot tea. Reading is fundamental.
It is.
Understanding comprehension is fundamental. We've lost the art of reading comprehension in this country. And it is sad to see. We've lost the ability to critically think. We've lost the ability to do research because everything has just been given to us
on a plate.
On a plate.
Without any type of discernment.
Exactly. So I say that to say it's very easy to understand. I'm a big organized crime person. I love organized crime. I actually took white crime and organized crime in college. And it is very fascinating to see how these structures develop and how the government then steps in to try to bring these structures down. And one of the things that I learned is when the feds come, they have a 98% accuracy rate when it comes to conviction. A 98% conviction rate. So when they come, understand that they have been investigating somebody for years.
Yes.
Not 6 days, not 60 days, not a year. This has been something that has been ongoing. I fully believe that Diddy knew that that something was happening before the Cassie thing happened, because if you remember, he made all of his old artists sign an NDA in order to give him all their publishing rights back. When that happened, I was like, okay, something's going down, because why do I need to sign an NDA to get my rights back? And a lot of people did it, but some people did not. And then a few months later, Cassie comes out and she speaks her mind and says her piece about their relationship, which I fully believe. And I don't care that she waited this long to do it. I don't care. I can't tell somebody when it's appropriate to release their trauma in the way that they decide to release it. As long as they're not being harmful to themselves or to others, I can't make that decision or judgment on anybody.
Right.
And there's two parts to this. A lot of conversation is going around to his sexual proclivities. I don't care who Diddy sleeps with.
Why does anybody care? Because we're past that point in this day and age. I don't care.
We're not, though. Our community is still very much hung up on hyper-masculinity, sexuality, like what your sexuality is and all of that. I don't care who Diddy sleeps with, as long as they are consenting adults. Okay. My issue is if the things that I've been reading are true, is that he helped cover up a shooting, like that his son shot somebody in a bathroom, or he shot somebody in a bathroom. If he's covering up a rape that his son allegedly committed, he's sex trafficking underage women. You know, there's different types of sex trafficking. Like there's like prostitution where the people are like call girls and they are willing and they get on these private jets that are owned by these men and they get flew out to Dubai and they have sex with very rich men and they get paid very well to do that. And they are very comfortable in doing that. Some of your Instagram faves, they do this. Some of the people you follow, they're content creators. This is what they do. Apparently, Young Miami was one of the girls that Puff used to get flued out to have relations with other men. And if she was cool with it, that's fine. It's when you start doing things where the people are not consenting, where they don't want to do it, there's drugs involved, that becomes a problem. Right. And so that's my piece on it. I feel like I feel like he has done some very evil, despicable things. and the chickens have come home to roost. And they that's just that.
Do. They always do.
And that's just that. And so that's my piece on Diddy. If, you know, but I want the conversation to stay away from these like Instagram, like dialogues, conspiracy theories that just don't mean anything and don't have value. I will say that there was one thing that I did put some weight to where there was a psychic. I don't necessarily believe in psychic abilities per se, but this one woman was a psychic. It was a white woman. And like last year or sometime, she said she was in contact with Kim Porter, which we all know is Diddy's child's mother who passed away.
Under suspicious circumstances.
Under suspicious circumstances. And people think that he had something to do with it. And she said that she was in contact with Kim Porter, and they basically said something was going to happen to Diddy around Easter time. Now, this woman said this in November. And here we are, March, right before Easter, the feds came. So I was like, wow, this woman said this. And then she said some other things about some people that I really do like. So that aside. But I just want our people to do a lot of work in terms of research and really figuring out things. We take certain concepts, constructs, and then we blow them up to be this big thing. And
that's
really
another
doesn't.
Topic that to talk about sometimes, because the way we elevate people and put them on pedestals and think that we know them only based on the persona, and then we take our whole lives to decide how we think that person should react, or if this is how they react, even though you don't know them worth a damn.
Right.
And people are so invested.
So invested.
That the conversations online that I've seen, oh my goodness, they've been so intense.
Very much
like,
so.
Yeah. And if you've seen the, and I don't know how you feel about Jaguar, what's her name?
Jaguar Wright.
Yeah. And her commentaries through everything and how she's coming up in concert with Kat and all these other things. It's just like a whole living soap opera. It's on another level. And some
it is.
Folks are really invested.
I mean, I feel like where there's smoke, there's fire, but I also have a brain, and I feel like I am semi-intellectual, and I feel like I do my research before I speak on anything, so, which then brings me to Beyonce, right, because there is some connection, like people are saying that now Jay-Z is going to get taken down, and like that same psychic said in 3 years, his whole thing is going to crumble because he's been doing things, and I've heard some very crazy like conspiracy theories on them too. It's just, it's too much.
I saw that yesterday. I was working on some other stuff, and
you get, if you start going down
a
rabbit hole
yesterday.
Yeah,
oh my
I'm going
God.
Down in a rabbit hole with them, and I'm just like, some stuff I'm like, okay, if that is true, how does that benefit me, or how does it not benefit me? She practices witchcraft. Well, in your belief system, by the way that you've been taught, probably by church and some other things, you look at witchcraft as this evil thing. You look at witches as these evil things. I know a witch personally, and I can tell you she's far from being anywhere near evil. So, and it's more like a religion, a belief system, a spiritual construct. But again, people take things and they move it so far out that it's just like the Geechee Gullah. Like they practice, I don't want to say voodoo per se, but that's what they believe in. But there is a religious spiritual
component
to that a lot of people miss. And I just wish better for my people when it comes to critical thinking and doing research and really understanding what's happening.
But a lot of that comes from our aunts, like literally all of that comes from ancestral practices before they came to this country that were demonized once they got here.
Exactly.
I think folks forget that just how you may, they consider a spell, a prayer is just the same as a spell. You're still talking it and you're hoping it comes, it's just the nomenclature is different.
Different, exactly.
And the adoration is different. It's just, people don't realize ancestral, if you want to say the colonizers, stripped that away and said it was evil, which is what has fed into why all that stuff is considered evil now.
Right, because,
just as a fact, you know.
And then we can get into Christianity and all that stuff. I don't want to do that.
Right.
If you're hyper religious and you're like, Zarifa, you the devil, then turn off now, because I don't give a shit what you think. I'm just telling you what my belief structure is and how I decide to move through life. Period. And we don't have to agree. And I'm okay with that. I've said some controversial things, and I stand by those things because I'm not going to say it if I don't stand by it, right? I'm just not going to do it. So just the circling around Beyonce, she released what she says is a Beyonce album, not a country album, but there's a lot of country influence in this album. There's folk, there's jazz, there's rock. It's a very, it's an Americana album. I'm going to say something that, again, is going to be controversial to some people. I believe in 20 years, we will be looking at this album and studying it for the creative genius that this album, like the pure storytelling in this, the very, the historical context of this album, the way that she decided to name some of her songs, the people that she decided to have on this album. There are people who are dissecting this album, and white people. That's the thing. Not just us. It's the white folks that are like, this album is just, if she does not win album of the year, the Grammys are rigged. They said they don't care who comes out with the album. Taylor Swift is coming out with the album. They said there's no way that her album is going to be as good as this. And I truly believe it. Not because I'm a Beyonce fan, but I just looking at this body of work and understanding where it was rooted from and the conversations around it. I laugh when people, again, if you do your research, a lot of the things that people deem as country come from Africans, African Americans. Go ahead
now. Say that.
Somebody on I think Twitter or something was like, oh, well, how can y'all be enslaved and create so much stuff? For the sake, you just said it.
Hello.
You just proved the point. We create things, but if you are enslaved, the person who has enslaved you, who has power over you, and strip you of everything and claim it for theirs.
Of course.
And I'm sorry to say this because I have friends that are non-POCs. And I am not a bigot or racist by any means. But I really want white people to understand that you created nothing. You have created nothing. Everything that you have done has been built off the back of a person of color. And it's I understand you don't want to understand that, but it is a fact. It's a historical fact. It is not something that is made up. It is not a fairy tale or a fable. It is a fact. It is a fact. And I'm not even talking about it in this country. I'm talking about around the globe. It is a fact. You've just taken things from other people and may have improved upon it, but there's nothing that you have said that you've created that is your own. There's just not. And if we were to strip everything that people have contributed to the things that you've monopolized and capitalized off of, you would be left with nothing.
That part.
And I'm not saying specifically, I'm just saying as a construct, the white supremacy and the patriarchy, the way things are set up, is just, these are facts.
Right.
So country music is not yours. It never was yours. Yeah. You know, and there are people who are mad that she's doing country. This woman was born in Texas.
Is what threw me. And I'm like, they do know she was born in Texas, right? They do know that. I don't understand either.
Cowboy,
like, that's not country. She is
country. Cowboy was a derogatory term used for black men who worked on ranches. They were cowboys. White men were considered cattle ranchers. But somehow we've taken that term and now you want to claim it as yours, but it's not. It was rooted in something very derogatory.
Yeah, you know, this happens. That's the history of us as America.
It is. And if you think about where the first cowboys were, trust me, they weren't here. Let's go South America. Let's go Mexico. Let's go to Central America. And then let's have these conversations.
Well, that would be too much like right.
So I'm just saying that to say that. Then moving on to something lighter.
Yeah.
I'm not a country person. I enjoyed this album. Is it my favorite Beyonce album? No. Is it in my top three? I don't know. Renaissance is like it for me. Understanding that Cowboy Carter was supposed to come out first and then Renaissance, it makes a lot of sense. Renaissance is definitely number one for me. Number two is definitely Lemonade. And then maybe, I mean, Cowboy Carter is fighting number three spot with a couple other albums.
Cowboy Carter second because she knew people would run and get it. I mean, outside she's being Beyonce, but after hearing Renaissance, folks are like, of course I'm going to go buy it. That may not, or no. Because I know she has her loyal fans, but...
She said why she did it. She said that Cowboy Carter was supposed to come out first, but the time to release Renaissance, we needed joy and light and happiness. We needed to feel joy and light and happiness. We were in a very dark place, and she wanted to give us something to feel happy about, a safe space. And that's what that album did. And I think that that is really why that album was so well received, because it came at a time when we all felt like shit.
Right. Can't blame me for that.
And that album, think about how that album carried us, the concert, people were getting dressed up. I mean, it was a whole cultural experience. So I feel like, you know, I understand why she released Renaissance first. It's a shame because Cowboy Carter really, if it would make sense chronologically for Cowboy Carter to come out first, but she has Linda Martell on there. She has, if you don't know who Linda Martell is, please do your research. She has Willie Nelson. She has Dolly Parton. She sampled Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Were Made for Walking. She did Blackbird, which people were trying to tell Paul McCartney, who wrote the song, what Blackbird was about, and that Beyonce shouldn't did it, shouldn't have done it, when Blackbird literally is about Black women specifically. What do you mean? Oh, and he says it.
The self-righteousness of folks thinking they know what the artist is thinking.
He literally got on Twitter and said, I'm honored that she decided to do it. She did it beautifully. I wrote this song out of the civil rights movement, looking at the Little Rock Nine, and looking at how these women carried themselves. In England, they call women birds, black birds. It was never yours. It was definitely written for somebody else. And somebody says, I like to respectfully disagree. How the hell are you going to disagree with the man who wrote the song? This is how insane these people are. This is how crazy
cognitive dissonance runs so high these days, and just pure stupidity.
Right.
I'm just going to put that out there. I swear, like 80%. I shouldn't say that. I'm gonna refrain from what I was about to say about stupidity in America.
It's just as stupidity it is at all time high. And then people were like, she redid Jolene, which I'm going to say is not my favorite song on the album. I like the original Jolene, but I understand her reworking of it. I understand it's coming, like, she's a bad bitch. Why do I need to beg you to stop dealing with my man? Like, I'm a bad bitch. Right. I'm just warning you. If you don't leave him alone, it's going to be some problems. And if you listen to the album, it makes sense. Like, what happens after that and the songs after that very much make sense. So... And everybody was like, well, when I looked at the credits, it was Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton wrote it because she got 100%. Please do your research. No, Dolly Parton has said on several occasions, if you want to do my song, I don't give a shit. You can do my song, but you're going to give me 100% writing credit for
it. Hello, thank you.
And she says it because it's my work. I want my family to be able to eat off that for generations to come. So why would I give you something, ownership in something that's mine, even if you did a derivative of it?
Right.
And so Beyonce gave her 100%.
Of course, because it's her song.
Right.
It's just a derivative thereof. Why wouldn't she?
Right.
But you know, folks, the same
folks. Folks just...
They're going to tell Paul McCartney what his song meant.
Exactly. I'm sorry. And I just, I just want us to refocus. Reconnect.
The instant gratification, having everything at our fingertips, whether it's true or not, and having other people think for us has taken over on so many levels. You can't, and it goes to the point of folks can't even have a conversation. I was out last night, and I was in, Adams Morgan last night. And I was supposed to go to a birthday party, but I couldn't find parking. Then I did, and it was just not safe. So I was like, I'm out. Anyway, I say all that to say, as I'm driving through the street, right? It is like 11 o'clock at night, 11:30 in Adams Morgan, and which is a very congested area in DC, very hot, popular and stuff like that. But there were people walking around in the dead of night, as I consider it at that time in DC, on their phone, walking down the street. And I'm like, how were you not aware of your surroundings? Knowing what's going on. You know, it's just kind of crazy.
It is kind of crazy. But, you know, I think in the next episode, because we're, I think it's about closure. Mm-hmm. I think I may talk a little bit more about this. Or even if we just get into pop culture at some point, like an episode mm-hmm. on pop culture, and just talk about how the internet has just yes. dumbed down.
So many people.
So many people. But let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our tea time segment.
So, like Z said, this topic is about the midlife crisis. We hear it thrown around all the time. We're of that age where some of us are seeing it in a little bit more prevalent these days because of who we followed over throughout the years and who we grew up with in the media and stuff like that. And we're at that age where it becomes that catchphrase, if you will. So what is a midlife crisis? We're trying to figure out what does it really mean? How does it affect us differently based on our relationship status, our gender, and the path that we've chosen in life? And how are folks navigating this? And how are you supporting or interacting with those that may be going through it? Loved ones, friends, whatever. So, you know, hopefully we can impart some of that knowledge. So what exactly is a midlife crisis? It's defined as a period of emotional turmoil in middle age, around 40 to 60 years old. I've seen some research that says you start at 35, and I'm like, how the hell you start at 35? But okay. Anyway, you know, sometimes the mid-30s characterized as a strong desire for change. You know, you're navigating it. You know, while you're in life, you're going to get to certain points where you're like, is this really what I want to be doing with my life? And, you know, it can bring unique life transitions, unlike other parts of your life, because you may have had kids, you may have gotten married, you might have bought a house, you've done everything that society says you should do. And maybe you kind of wake up and realize, is this really what I want to do? And this is how I want to live my life. You start questioning your mortality, your bones start aching. We all know when we're like, we were out somewhere with the kids. And so, I don't know, I think Charlie was jumping around or something. I was like, oh, I wish my knees were like that. But they, they're not, you know what I mean? You know, and the criteria for what a midlife crisis is not necessarily well-defined, and it differs from person to person, but it's definitely marked by strong feelings of and unhealthy coping skills, and you tend to act out sometimes for some folks, good, bad, or indifferent, and there's a lot of behavior changes. So what can cause it? It can be triggered by divorce, a death of a loved one, boredom, a significant life event, you know. Sometimes marriage triggers that because people may get married later in life, and then they get married and they don't, because now they're grown, they don't think, it doesn't turn out like they thought, and it causes them to go left, so to speak. You know, it can be a time of so many changes. You know, this could be related to an increase and decrease in responsibilities surrounding your children becoming more independent, and you feel like you don't have any say in their life anymore, or that you're not as significant to them as they were to you, so to speak. Having to care for an aging parent, being a caregiver definitely puts midlife crisis into full relief, because it can make you kind of think like, is this how my life is going to be? This is not what I thought it was. Or it brings your mortality in because you see a loved one aging and going through the ups and the downs of what that looks like. You know, the career thing, a lot of people, midlife crisis, they are like, this is not what I went to school for. I hate my job. I hate it here, you know, and it makes you think about, and I think that just as a quick aside for the, during COVID, I think people had a COVID crisis, a COVID midlife crisis, so to speak, or it triggered a life crisis because folks were like, this is, I'm in the house with this person, this job, this is not what I want for my life. And right. I think a lot of people ended up pivoting and changing their lives. A lot of people got divorced. A lot of people got married as a result of COVID because they felt life was too short and they wanted to be with their boo thing, or life was too short. Ain't no way in hell I'm spending my rest of my life with this person. You know, it's just different ways and things that can trigger it. You also may miss out on pursuing something about your life like I woulda, coulda, shoulda. Mm-hmm. Like I know there's parts of time, my life, there's a time in my life I got accepted to this program at Harvard and I had already decided to do another fellowship. I'm like, well, what would my life have been had I gone to that program at Harvard instead of doing what it is I did alternatively? Would I be more, you know, it's you just sit there and think about what ifs, woulda, coulda, shouldas. And then your physical abilities have declined. Like I said, your knees ain't up to par. You can't drop down and get your eagle on.
It's right.
Drop down and get a pigeon and don't get back up. Just stay there. Ain't no eagle on, you know. And then, you know, your lifestyles with your relationships, be it friendships fade, some get new. And then your intimate relationships or your romantic relationships, they take a turn because that person is also maybe going through something as well that they're trying to figure out. And then there's a lack of communication. So, you know, things happen and it can feed into saying, you know, I didn't finish this goal that I had for myself. And then that can lead to a whole bunch of other things, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot.
And I know you may be thinking, ooh, this is a lot. And I don't know if I'm going through a midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. But we're here to tell you some signs and symptoms of what could be a midlife crisis for you. The one way a person responds to a midlife crisis differs from the next. Some people may have, may experience like minimal outward signs, but have feelings that they don't know what to do with. While some may develop coping strategies that can be like damaging to their health, their finances, or their relationships. So there's sometimes you can have levels of anxiety, abrupt career or lifestyle changes, such as quitting a job or moving a home. And you may be seeing some of these not within yourself, but maybe in somebody else. Maybe you're seeing somebody move a little different. You're like, are they going through a midlife crisis?
Right.
behavior changes, including becoming antisocial, impulsive, or irrational. Chronic remembrance, remembrance too. Chronic reminiscence and reflection about the past, focusing on youthful memories, former lovers, past adventures, or having fewer responsibilities during a prior or previous life stage.
This whole adulting thing.
Yes. Depression or major mood changes. Dishonor to romantic relationships like avoidance, cheating, marital infidelity, etc. Now I want to say this. A lot of these things could happen to you at 25.
Correct.
Some of these things could happen to you at 75, right? Doesn't necessarily... it is not necessarily indicated by that, but it's what Natalie said, right? That sometimes there's a period of emotional turmoil in middle age. So this is like around between 40 to 60. And so for us, I'm 40. How old am I? 47? Okay, yeah, 47.
This is the time we're all at the same age.
Yes, we're all the same age, right? Yeah. Right. So
at 47. Like, for like 8 months, we're all the same age.
8 months, yes. So I'm 47, and no. It's just you and me left. And that,
that's
and
it?
Nikki.
Oh, because
yeah, everybody else turned 48.
They already did. That's right. Because Nicole's.
Oh, so, that's just, sorry. We just went off.
Yeah, we like trying to think about our age.
and how, yes,
all of us in the crew, we just had a bunch of birthdays in our crew.
A lot of people born in March.
Yeah.
So you know, this is around the time that you might start seeing, if you are someone who is in that age range, 40 to 60, you may be experiencing some of these things, or you may be witnessing somebody play out these symptoms in real life, in real time. And there are stages to it. This is not just something that just happens.
Yes.
Overnight, there are stages.
Very much so. And it's a lot, it's akin to like stages of grief for some folks. That's like a really good way to kind of couch it. Because it begins with some feelings of denial and then followed by anger. Because you realize, you wake up, you're like, what is my life? This can't be life. You know, and life be life-in. But what are some of the six stages? Denial, anger, you're replaying what you coulda, woulda, shoulda done. Depression about what you coulda, woulda, shoulda done or what you done did. And then withdrawal after you sit there and ruminate about what the hell did I just do or not do. And then accepting, well, I guess shit, I'm here. And then figuring out, how do I move past that and how do I move through it?
Yeah.
So those are some of the ideas.
And you know, when we're talking about that, like, It is grief.
Yeah. You're grieving that
life. You're grieving the life, your old life. So that this is the grief
you could have.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I I started rewatching Grey's Anatomy because really? There are shows that I just stopped watching at a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted to know how like things progress, like How to Get Away with Murder. I like stopped, I think, after season
three. But then
I went and watched all of
How to Get Away with Murder.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing. I started Scandal again, and I just couldn't. It got to a point where I was just like, okay, this is ridiculous, and I just couldn't finish. I think I did get to a season that I hadn't watched, and I started watching it, and I was like, I'm not watching this. This is the dumbest shit. I cannot. Like, it just was
foolish. But it was so captivating back then. You couldn't miss Scandal.
And the first, like, three seasons, I think it was, like, the first three seasons. But after that, it just got campy to me. And then I was like, well, let me try to get through this again. Nope. Turned it off. And I kind of feel like this is what's going to happen with Grey's because people, like, characters are getting on my nerves. They're, like, really irritating me. And I don't know if it's the way that Shonda Rhimes writes. But it's just something about these characters that started to grate me. But that's
a quick shout out to Shonda. She is phenomenal. She is the stuff that she writes from Bridgerton to Scandal to Grey's Anatomy. Just the talent as a woman in the industry.
She definitely
amazing.
Is no Tyler Perry. So that's good in my book. But
that is true.
But I say that to say there was an episode that I was watching where this man, he was 82 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to get a penile implant. And he
82.
And he was married and his wife died. And then for 20 years, he just didn't feel like life, like he just didn't feel like that part of his, felt like that part of his life is over. And then he's in a home and he met this woman and she's younger than him. And he's like, I want to start engaging in sex again. And it's just not working. And y'all gave me pills before. The pills ain't do nothing. So I need a penile implant. And his family's like, you're 82 years old. Why do you need it? Blah, blah, blah. And so he's talking to his doctor and he's talking to Mark Sloan. And he said, you know, you don't know this yet because you're still young. He was like, but you still have a lot to look forward to. You have the birth of your children, your grandchildren, getting married, buying a home. He said, but once that period in your life passes, what do you have to look forward to?
Ooh.
You don't have a lot of tomorrows left.
Oh, wow.
He said, you have a lot of yesterdays. He said, you have a lot of yesterdays, but very little tomorrows to look forward to.
Wow.
And that's, I kind of equate that to a midlife crisis, right? Because we are in the middle of a lot of us are still transitioning. Like, I just got a new job. It's a lateral move. It's fine. But a lot of us are still trying to figure out, can we transition? Like, it was hard for me to, and it's still something I'm conflicted with because I'm like, am I really about to start a whole new career? Position,
at
47, like, am I about to really do that? What is that gonna look like, right?
Like, me starting my company in my late 40s, like,
right,
what, or thinking to still go back for my doctorate and I'm about to be 50, like,
right,
do I really want to do that? But
right, but it's like you said, there's a level of grief that it's like you mourn the life that you had, right?
Yes.
And I see that, like, I have a child. I'm not going to have any more children. It's not possible for me to have any more children. You know, there's still some life events, big life events that I can look forward to. But once those happen, what's left?
You know? You got to look at that perspective. And that's where reinvention comes into play. And that, I think, sometimes definitely plays into where the midlife crisis bubbles to the surface, because people feel like they need to reinvent themselves because they're like, what do I have left? And then that's why you see what you see sometimes.
Right. And I think I had a quarter life crisis, which a lot of people say happens when you're like in your 20s. I really do believe that I had like a quarter life crisis where I just felt like, I am here. Why am I here? Why am I doing this? And my 20s were a very... I'm not going to go too deep into it, but my 20s were a very dark period. It was a very dark time. It was
a lot going on.
Yeah, my 20s were not kind to me. And I was not kind to myself during my 20s. So I really had like this existential like crisis where I was just like, what the f-? And it was more based in anxiety, right? Because we talk about anxiety a lot. As anxiety is about the future, depression is about the past.
Yeah.
It was a lot of it. I was in, it was like a lot of it. And I think that is where the, I developed the anxiety and depression. My 20s was definitely, I mean, I do believe that I dealt with it at some point in college, like when I would have my little sabbaticals from you all, like I'd be like, yeah, like, where is he? Oh, she's on the sabbaticals. And I don't think at that point. Yeah.
She really did go on a sabbatical, y'all.
Yeah, I would just not. I would just be in my room. I didn't want to talk to nobody. I didn't want to be around people. And I didn't have a name for it specifically then. Because think about it. Depression and anxiety is not something that we've really talked about in college, right? It wasn't like very, it's not like how it is now. Yeah, it's not like how it is now. But I think that that my 20s actually exacerbated those feelings.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's been all about managing those emotions and those feelings because I don't want to go through a midlife crisis, right? I don't want to be 50 looking back and saying, shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? A lot of people do that. A lot of people do that with their relationships, right? You can be in a relationship and wake up and be like, why have I been with this person the last 15 years, right? Or you can wake up and be like, I really wasted 15 years of this person's time, right? Or you can wake up and be like, I took my partner for granted these 15 years. What was I thinking?
And now I'm going to do something right. And then you try to course correct.
So, you know, when we think about it from that perspective, it's just like, okay, but then, okay, well, then how long does this all last? Because, yeah, there are stages, but how long is it going to last? Like, I see somebody going through this or I'm going through this and I need to know, when are they going to come out of it? When am I going to come out of it?
Are they going to come out of it?
I think it depends. Our research has shown that it definitely just depends from person to person. I mean, it depends on the frequency of your feelings and how you choose to resolve them. A lot of us in the Gen X era came to therapy late. So for us, I think the midlife crisis hits a little harder because we are just now coming to terms with trying to get into therapy and figuring out what's what. They're not listening to this. I know they won't. I saw somebody that I know post something recently about them wanting a partner. They're 48 and them looking for a partner. And I'm thinking about this person and I'm like, you had multiple opportunities, I know specifically, to be in a relationship with a good woman. And for whatever reason, you just aren't. And that's not on them. That's on you. And you need to do some introspection to figure out what is going on in your head. Like, why is it so hard for you to just commit to somebody? Like, you can't, it's not about the fact that you haven't had. Because you have. I've seen it with my own two eyes. What is it? And then I'm thinking, like, they're probably going through a midlife crisis themselves because they don't have any children. They've never been married. I don't remember the last time they were in a serious relationship. So they're going to look up at 50 and still be in the same place. That's probably not a happy feeling.
That is true.
So for men, sometimes a stage can last to 3 to 10 years. And that makes a lot of sense in my book because men tend to be a little hard, like harder to crack when it comes to dealing with their feelings and their emotions and sitting down and really unpacking all of that. And for women, I think it says about 2 to 5 years. And I think a lot of that also depends on menopause and.
But women are always, I won't say all, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of women are introspective most of their lives. So it wouldn't hit the same because you have those 3 to 10 versus 2 to 5. Women normally sit and think and contemplate and think about their lives because of certain things that we are, timetables that we are already on by society. So we have to kind of shorten that reflection time. Whereas guys, a lot of times, they're just floating through life and whatever. So it can take them that long. Or it can be, they can be in it that long.
Yeah, they can be. And I feel like a lot of times for some of us, it is definitely difficult during that time period. Maybe for men, it takes a little longer for them to figure it out because they don't know, is it depression? Is it midlife crisis? And if it is depression, I'm like, they don't want to seem weak if they think it's depression because men don't like to be seen as vulnerable and weak. So maybe, and you could be going through this, somebody who's listening right now, like, I don't know if it's depression. I don't know if it's just a midlife crisis. It could be a combination of both.
True.
Depression is a diagnosable mood disorder with an established list of diagnostic criteria. Trust me, I know.
Because there's the DMS. I have DMS been. Four.
Yes. A midlife crisis is not a recognized medical or psychiatric condition. So right there, this is one of the delineations between whether you think it's depression or a midlife crisis. For depression, symptoms can occur in people of any age, including teenagers or older adults. Okay, so midlife crisis signs occur in middle adulthood. So maybe you've been a happy-go-lucky person
your whole life,
and then you hit 45 and you feel this funk. You're unhappy with your career.
Yes.
You look and you'll be like, I wasted 5 years with this ninja and he ain't doing nothing for me. He ain't doing this, that, whatever.
You see it all the time. It's all over the gram. Right. It's all over the gram, you know.
Maybe this is the beginning of a middle life crisis. Depression is often caused by a combination of biological, psychological, and social factors. Where a midlife crisis is more just your own revelation and reevaluation of your life as you age.
Right.
You know, you get to be 47, like, damn, I said I was going to be a partner in a firm by this time, and I'm not. Or I said I was going to be, you know, the world-renowned surgeon at this point. Or I said I was going to be living in a McMansion somewhere in the hills of Tennessee. And, you know, there's just a lot.
A whole host of things.
Exactly. Depression can the symptoms with depression are more persistent and severe. Where midlife crisis is a sense of dissatisfaction may come and go throughout midlife. I can tell you, as somebody who has suffered from depression, sometimes depression can be all consuming. It's something that, like, sometimes it's hard to get out of bed. Sometimes it's like you just want to lay on a bathroom floor and just don't move. Like, whereas a midlife crisis is just like, I'm just dissatisfied. And I'm not downplaying midlife crisis, right? But it is like, I'm just dissatisfied with the direction my life has gone. I have regrets.
Yeah.
Regrets. I do believe, though, that, before I get there, the treatment may involve, depression, the treatment may involve medication, therapy, and lifestyle changes, where the symptoms for a midlife crisis can subside when you regain a sense of peace in your life's direction.
After you've kind of course corrected.
Right.
And stuff like that. But it's hard to sometimes to discern which is which, especially between the sexes. Because it happens and shows up differently in both sexes. And I'm just going to give a high level because there's a lot.
Are you fanning yourself?
Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry, y'all. I'm having a personal summer, y'all. And y'all hearing. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
It just felt like a helicopter. It's like, woo, 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 woo.
Hopefully somebody can take that out. Sorry, y'all. I was having a personal summer and I was so hot. Hello, midlife crisis. That's part of that. Some of it. Not that I'm going through one, but that can, menopause can, what I'm going through and how I'm going through it, I can see how this could trigger a midlife crisis for some women. So, and actually it kind of dovetails beautifully into what I'm about to talk about. You know, so we might experience it differently, including our social, societal expectations, our career progression, as you mentioned before, and then your own identity issues. So a lot of us in our 40s and 50s start suffering a unique brand that has left them burned out, or left us burned out, and self-doubting, especially with how society sees us, uplifts us on a pedestal, then knocks us off and tells us to climb back up. On numerous occasions, you know, there could be increased depression or depressive behaviors, increased menopause and depression. Menopause sometimes goes hand in hand with depression, because it's that third stage of your life, and you haven't. One thing that was noted in our research, there's a higher level of suicide surrounding this age in women than others in their other stages of life. Because of where they think they should be, because of the emotional challenges that they may be having. You know, you sit down and you question your you have a preoccupation with existential concerns, like, did I need to marry this person? Should I still stay married to this person? Or I should not have, I should have gave that other person a chance because I wouldn't be in this situation right now. Looking at your choices of becoming a mother, not becoming a mother, not being able to have children or having children and realizing for some, and I've heard this from both. Yeah, myself, of course, I wasn't able to have children. And so, you know, I have my moments of regret or I wish I could have, should have, should I have adopted, stuff like that. And then on the other flip side of that, I've heard women say, I wish I never had kids because it took away my whole life. Like I didn't get to do half the stuff that I wanted to do because I had children. I've heard it all on both sides. Mm-hmm. You know, sleep problems. Lord Jesus, with the perimenopause and the menopause, that sleep or lack thereof is real. Or you get to figure out you can take naps, or you have night sweats, or you just up and your mind is racing, you know, mm-hmm. your mood swings, the weight loss, weight gain. Our bodies, our metabolism is not a 20-year-old metabolism anymore. Mm-mm. We all know how much longer it takes for us to lose weight because then our knees be hurting and then we can't drop it like it's hot and work out the way we want to.
Listen.
It's all connected. You know, the hot flash is what I just said. You know, the sense of boredom or apathy that Z referred to earlier, you just kind of like, you don't feel like doing nothing with nobody, nowhere. And mm-hmm. I mean, we all see those memes on social media. They're like, what it's like being grown and going to the club. I don't know. You're like club. How about we go to the coffee house and we listen to the music that's playing overhead at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and drop it like it's not hot, lukewarm. And we be, think about it. We be like, ooh, girl, what time are you going out? Girl, it's 9 o'clock. I don't know. I'm about to be in this here bed.
Listen.
Or you go out to the club and you realize you don't need to be here. Mm-hmm. What am I doing here? All those types of things, and you go and you feel like, am I at a college convention when you go out and you're like, am I that old? Then you start feeling old.
Yeah.
You know, loss of stability. That could be a host of different reasons why you feel a loss of stability in your life, be it with your job, your personal endeavors, marriage, lack of marriage, household, finances, just things aren't where you think they should be. And you start wondering, well, what's a big change I can make? Some people cut off all their hair. Some people buy a new car with women. Sometimes they go off and say, I'm divorced and so, and I'm going to live abroad in Portugal or some stuff like that, you know? Or they do the eat, pray, love thing and go off and travel the world and find themselves, you know? And you sit and wonder about, you know, days gone by, you know, with what, you know, how it was when, you know, back in the day. I think Gen Xers, we do that a lot.
Yeah.
We do that a lot with the back in the day type of thing. And I think I saw a meme the other day about how when the young folk today don't have the stamina we used to, because we would go to the club, come home at 3 or 4 in the morning, take a nap and get up and go to work. We didn't call off sick. We right. showed up at work. We might've been a little loopy, but we showed up, sure enough, showed up for work. You know, it was a whole different thing. You get overwhelmed, your appearance changes, your boobs are sagging, your booty is sagging, your thighs is rubbing together a little bit more than they used to. You know, just you start seeing fine lines for some folks, or, you know, your whole body starts to change. And for women, that can be devastating. Mm-hmm. And especially now with the emphasis on BBLs and cosmetic surgery, I think it's that much harder for women now than it used to be. Because you think how, you know, going to get plastic surgery back in the day was like, oh my God, that's like $40,000-$50,000. Now you can affirm it or afterpay it for like $50 a month. You know, it's a lot more accessible in our reach. And then the pains and aches and pains. One morning I got up and my hip was out of socket. I just had to lay there. I stepped out of the bed and fell down. I said, what is going on? And my hip said, no, not today. We just lay here. And you have to accept those things. And of course, you know, menstrual cycle, you have perimenopause and all that. It just shows up so differently.
Yeah.
But men, on the other hand.
Men is a whole different thing.
Different. There's much more attention placed on men.
Yes. I think that midlife crisis is usually pushed. The narrative is usually pushed. This just usually is something that men go through. But women do go through it. But Natalie just went through all of the different things that come with a midlife crisis for women, you know, what it looks like for women, but for men, it looks a little different, right? There's a drop in satisfaction. Yeah. There's increased sadness. There's increased mood changes. There's the spontaneous decision-making, which I think we see a lot played out in like these tropes, like in movies and stuff. Like, oh, he went out and bought a sports car and started wearing Speedo underwear, right?
Right. Like, dating women half his age or 30 years younger.
Whatever. Right. Like, I mean, those are some of the tropes that we see, but then some of them are a little bit more scary, I would say, or just a little bit more like telling, like they could begin drinking alcohol, spending a lot of money, gambling, using drugs, just being, being very irresponsible. And, you know, maybe in some situations where it's like infidelity is just a one-time thing. It's, they could just be out here just
in
running
the
streets. Right.
They for the streets.
Right.
For the streets. Without regard for what the impact is back home.
Right. A focus on change, right? A lot of men can get new clothes, new activities, career changes, ending plans or giving up, frustration and irritability with work, family, and self. I think a lot of men, this is probably fits in a cat, like a lot of men probably fit into this particular category. I think that there are a lot of men who probably do feel a little bit of irritability with their work and with their family and their self and their position in the family, right? We are living in a world now where when our parents were coming up, it was like, okay, there was a two-parent working household, right? And the man probably still made more than the woman. And we're talking about, like, let's say 70s and 80s. But now you're finding situations where women are out earning their partner. And that causes
more often than not.
And that causes a lot of frustration. It's like, if you are a man who has traditional values, how do you hold those traditional values when you have someone in the household who's making more money than you and can make decisions financially in a manner, in a way that you can't, right?
And you feel emasculated, and it's all depend on the dynamics of how that relationship is set up. Because for some men, it doesn't faze them. They're like, my lady, she's doing her thing. I'm happy. I'm proud of her. Because there's other ways that I guess he's secure in his manhood. And now on the flip side, historically some men could never handle it.
It turn into a bit of resentment.
Oh, for sure.
Then that resentment turns into them withdrawing from their life, right? Withdrawing from their relationships, withholding affection and withholding love. You know what I mean? And it's they're too embarrassed to talk about their current state. They're disappointed in some of the choices they made, right? They made that led to their dissatisfaction. And so what they do is they turn it outward instead of doing the work inward. So they start to blame the people around them. I would have been more successful if I wasn't saddled with you and this kid. Or I would be, in a better place if I hadn't decided to get married to you. Or I would have been better if my supervisor just would have given me that opportunity instead of giving it to somebody else. If I had just not listened to such and such, I probably would be in a better place right now. Like, that's what men do. And I think that resentment builds up, and then that resentment either can turn into anger, and then they lash out, or it can turn into withdrawal, where they just don't deal with you at all. And that's unfortunate. But, it's not like you can't turn it all around. And make a new start, so to speak, and get your life back on track. If you are somebody who is experiencing a midlife crisis, or you know somebody that's experiencing a midlife crisis, there's ways to kind of turn this thing around.
Right, for sure. And then, so here are a few tips on how to restart, reboot once you've taken the time to acknowledge that you're in this space. And for some, this may take a while to get here, but focus more energy on yourself and rebuilding yourself, maybe in a positive way. Let me characterize it, because you can focus on yourself, become so self-absorbed that you neglect everything else in your life. So I don't mean it in that way. Focus more energy on yourself in a good, positive way. Make note of the changes in your life. What are some things that you have done that you may want to course correct, or that you want to continue doing because it's been positive? Learn something new. They have all these classes out there, folks, become I don't know. It's kind of like when COVID, people discovered new things about themselves. They started new things. You know, some people started businesses. Some people started crocheting. Some people, I don't know, became a horticulturist. I don't know. But you found
I started to make candles.
Right. Exactly. You know, so you find something that is a passion that may have been suppressed based on how you were living your life previously. You know, reconnect with friends and family. And I think in this day and age, you know, we are so held hostage by our devices. And it's crazy for me to think sometimes how much folks are addicted to staying connected via electronic device, but in that process deteriorate, their actual face-to-face connections deteriorate as a result of the desire to connect electronically with everyone else. You mm-hmm. ignore the immediate connections that you have in your immediate space. Because I know there's people that are addicted to their phones like nobody's business and have no relationship, physical conversation relationships with anyone around them because they are too busy talking and chatting with other people that aren't in their space. And they are addicted to their phones. And it's really sad. You know, and it takes away from you being able to make time for your love life. Or your love life, and I put that in quotes, is just a figment of what has been of a personality that you created through electronic connection. Because that's not really the person. You don't know that person. You know what that person is purporting and what they're texting you. Find new ways to stay active, you know, start a mountain climbing. I don't know.
I don't know. Your bones and your knees, man. Yeah. I don't want to try that.
Right. You know, pick up a healthy habit. Maybe start walking in the morning and that as a way to stay active. You know, spend time outdoors. Enjoy your surroundings. Dedicate a project you're passionate about. Or try to find something that you may like, that you become passionate about. And most of all, I think this is so important, especially for Gen Xers. Consider therapy to talk about all the stuff that you've been going through in your life that you probably have some trauma about that's leading you to this point, to help you work through what it is you think you're going through or what you could be going through, you know, because, you know, on this show, we definitely promote therapy. And there's a reason for that, because there's a lot of stuff going on internally with yourself, externally in your life, and then externally with the world and how we respond to it.
Absolutely.
So it's definitely something to consider.
And I think, like, as a last sip, I guess, you know, I feel like it's okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's something, I think some of us fear getting older.
Yeah.
It's a blessing.
It is, let me tell you.
It is a blessing to get older.
It's a privilege.
It is. One of the things that has been a charge for me this year is to be healthier, right? I have some health issues currently that I am adjusting to and trying to figure out. And my goal is to really get healthy the best way that I can, because I want to be here for my daughter. Just an aside, my husband's mother had to have her hip replaced unexpectedly. She fell, she fractured her hip. And you know how old people are, sometimes they don't like to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And she waited and waited, and it turned into a full break. Now his mother's 85. And normally in situations like this, doctors don't want to operate on somebody who's 85 years old because there's a lot of complications, except like the research that I was doing, it's like hip surgeries can be very complicated and very dangerous for people that age. But she was in such good health. They said she was in such good health that they had no problem with doing the surgery. No high blood pressure, no cholesterol, like such perfect health at 85.
Yeah.
And I thought about that. And I said, that's what I want. You know, I want to be able to be that age. And if something happens, have surgery, and they're not concerned at all. They're like, you're in such good health. Like, we're not worried.
It makes a difference.
It does. And so, yes, you know, we can look at yesterday and say, man, shoulda, coulda, woulda, or those were the days, you know, that was a happy time in my life. That was the best years of my life. But tomorrow, next year could be the best year of your life. It's all about how you decide to live your life.
You gotta be intentional.
Very much so. I'm one who has decided not to live with regrets. We had this conversation before. We've had a podcast episode before about regrets. I try not to live with regrets, right? Things happen for a reason. And I look at those decisions and those choices and say, okay, when I look at where I'm at now, how happy am I? Right?
And how do you define happiness?
Right. Are my good days outweighing my bad days? Then those choices weren't regrets. Those choices got me to this place.
Right. That's a good way to look at it. I think people forget that, you know, how those choices can influence and make your life better. Just give you a pause, give you time to reflect and be like, okay, maybe I would have done it differently like this, but now I have the opportunity to course correct and try it this way.
Right. There are things that I have been, you know, I took a trip with my sister for the first time. Me and my sister, I'm 47. My sister is 40. I don't know how old she is. She's 4.5 years younger than me. So y'all do the math. And this is our first trip as adults that we took. We took the kids to California. And it's our first trip together. Our very first trip together as adults in our 40s.
Right.
What I'm saying is you can focus on yesterday and that's fine. But don't live, you can reminisce on yesterday.
Fair.
And that's fine. Fair. But to focus on it, to live in it, is unfair to your future. Because every day you ruminate about what could have been, you're missing what can be.
Can be, yeah.
You're missing what can be. I don't want to miss what can be.
My husband looking behind you.
Yeah, my husband and I. Right. My husband and I, and I'll talk about this probably the next time we meet up. I can't say anything about it now. But the last few years have been nothing bad. I don't want y'all to think we've been like on Skid Row. There's things that he has been achieving that has just put, you know, our family dynamic in a different construct.
Yeah.
And he finally has gotten to the point where he's achieved his goal. And we were talking about catching up on all of the things we had to put off, right? For him to get to this point. And I'm like, I'm taking all the trips. I'm doing all the things.
Yeah.
You can think about I'm using the card and I'll pay the card off, but we're taking the trips. We're doing the things, even if it's somewhere so small, like Virginia Beach. We're going to spend a family time together because now it's not about us. It's about our daughter, her core memories, but I shouldn't say it's about us. It's about her, but it's also about us. I don't want to wake up next year and be like, we didn't do this. We should have done this. You know what I mean? I'm very much for looking forward to the future. Aging doesn't scare me. You know?
It shouldn't. I mean, for some people it does because they see other people and what it looks like, but you don't realize what choices that person may have made that have put them in that situation.
Right.
That you may see and be, you know, frightened of.
Right.
But, you know, aging is aging and is a blessing. It is a privilege.
I want to age. My fear always comes from, I don't like day to day. Like, is God going to grant me the grace to live another day? That's where any of my anxiety comes from. It's not like growing older. Like I see that as a blessing. You know what I'm saying? I see it as a blessing. So, you know, I just say, if you are somebody that's experiencing a midlife crisis or you see somebody going through a midlife crisis, like, if it's you, be kind to yourself, do the work. If it's somebody else, be kind to them, help them do the work.
But don't be a punching bag while they're going through it. Because a lot of times midlife crises do lead to divorce, and that's okay. Because even though this person may be going through this change and what have you, that does not excuse their poor treatment of you because they're trying to figure their shit out. That is not acceptable. And you do what you have to do. And if that means some people will stay and make it through with their person that's going through a midlife crisis. And some people, because they just lost their ever-loving mind, they're like, you know what? I'm out. And that's okay. Either way. It's okay.
It's okay. Either way. Mm-hmm. I just say, be kind to one another. Be aware of what's happening. You know, sometimes we get so focused on the grind that we don't take time to really pay attention and check in on our people. So check in on your people, you know, even your friends. Your friends could be going through midlife crisis, you know?
True that.
You know, our friendships evolve and they change, you know, but check in on your people. Check in on your people. And it's funny that this we're ending this, and I'm thinking of two different topics that we're going to talk about. And I know next week I put in there that we're going to talk about closure, but I think we should either, and we'll get into this, perimenopause and menopause, because that is definitely a huge topic of right now. And then divorce, because I know I have a friend right now, who's going through a divorce. And I know a couple other people who are in the process of separating. And, you know, I think, well, we could get into it, but I feel like divorce used to be one of those like taboo things. Like people were embarrassed.
They were
getting in divorce. And now I look at him like, why are you embarrassed about saying you're no longer with that person? If that, if you outgrew that relationship, if it was no longer serving you, if you're not happy.
Or it's toxic and it's not to your, to your betterment or to your highest and greatest good, and it's only causing you damage.
So next episode is my topic to pick. We'll figure it out. So it's either going to be perimenopause, menopause, or divorce. I don't know yet, but we'll figure it out. And that's my list.
So as y'all, as per every episode, we want to thank you for joining us this week on Sippin' Tea with Nat and Z. You know, you can follow us on Instagram at sippin' tea_nat_z_pod and on Facebook at Sippin' Tea Nat and Z to get information on podcast tips, guest news, and all the like. Z does a really phenomenal job with the posts that she does that are really thought-provoking in the middle of the week to kind of get you through. So next week, we may or may not talk about closure. We may talk
about
menopause.
Week, next month. Remember.
Next month. Yes, that's right. Next month. Oh yes, on the May. We'll be talking about that closure and perimenopause or divorce or something, but we'll figure it out. It'll be a surprise for y'all. But thanks. Have a great week, month, and take care of yourself and each other. I feel like that was from a show sometime.
It was.
Take care of yourself and each other. Which that was a Navy show, right?
I don't know. Bye, y'all.
Bye.